All right, let's see if we're connected here. Oh, it looks like I have an excellent connection. Can anybody confirm that? Fritz Berger and Blood and Faith, welcome. It's Sunday morning. It's the 17th of September. It's a gorgeous fall day out here in the Rocky Mountains. Had a little get-together at our place last night. The stars and the cold were there, and so was joy and brotherhood and fellowship. This morning we're going to talk about three things that were at least used to be in vogue in the evangelical church. It used to be very popular to talk about the Antichrist and the beast in 666. I don't know if it's still popular or not. I don't know if that's still a subject of a minor literary genre, but it was back in the 1970s, at least back in the 1970s. And if you were an evangelical Christian in the 1970s, you knew all about the late great Planet Earth by an author by the name of Hal Lindsey. You knew all about the state of Israel, who were supposedly the promised people of God. You knew all about the beast and the mark of the beast and the 666, and you had to get the stamp or the tattoo on your head. You had to have all that in order to go down to the grocery store and buy food, and the police were round you up and force you to get the stamp, and the beast was roaming about, and there's this big Antichrist, a handsome devil in a nice suit, a couple little horns sticking out. I don't know if that's still a thing anymore. I think a lot of what happened in 1988 is that Jesus Christ did not return in 1988. Part of that genre was that the modern state of Israel represented the people of God, and in one generation exactly, Jesus Christ will return. So from 1948 to 1988 was one 40-year generation, and supposedly Jesus was coming back then. Jesus Christ did not come back. I don't know what happened to that industry. I suspect it's still there. I suspect it's still in force. I suspect they've tried to rearrange what they're talking about. They still worship the Jews. They still worship the Jews. So I wanted to bring a little bit of biblical context to three ideas. Now, if just to get ahead of us, in case you're asking me to identify who the 666 is, or who the Antichrist is, or who the beast is exactly, I may be I may disappoint you a little bit. Nevertheless, stick around. I think you'll get a pretty good insight to what is going on in the world today. And it's not, I don't come to you as, oh, this is a prophecy seminar. No, it's not a prophecy seminar. I'm talking about some concepts that are repeatable in the Holy Scriptures, some concepts that are repeatable in at least in Daniel, and in the book of Revelation. And if the Bible talks about them, you and I ought to talk about them. We ought to have an understanding of what's going on, especially in light, I think, of a couple of generations of evangelicals have been schooled in the Hal Lindsey theory of the end of the world and the tribulation and the rapture. So this is, in a sense, this is backing up, and this is saying, okay, let's back up. Instead of trying to drill down and say, who exactly is the beast? You know, what does the beast look like? How many arms and legs? How many horns? He's got 10 horns. Oh, boy, that's a strange beast crawling up out of some river somewhere. And I know for generations there's been people trying to count the letters in, you know, Henry Kissinger's name. Oh, it adds up to 6. Or Nixon, or, you know, who knows who? Probably Obama. Probably everybody. Maybe Fritz Berger, and I don't know. Let's count, and so I'm going to back up on that. We're going to take a look at, you know, let's look at these letters, numbers, 666. And if you've been listening to me for any length of time, you know that I've talked significantly about the Antichrist. I've spent a lot of time talking about the Antichrist, and I have, although I have not said there will be never some dude showing up with you know, a pointy tail, and I'm saying, look, you're missing the Antichrists that have been around since John wrote 1 John. He said, even now, there's many antichrists, and he defines for you the Antichrist. He who rejects the Father and the Son. Identify people and organizations that reject Jesus Christ, and he've identified an antichrist. Islam is antichrist. Judaism is antichrist. Atheism is antichrist. Hinduism is antichrist. Buddhism is Antichrist. You say, oh, but Buddhism and Hinduism, they accept many gods. Jesus is a god. Yeah, well, you know, that's the blasphemy of saying we're all gods and everything's a god, so nothing's a god. And we're going to talk about blasphemy and arrogance, too. That's one of the characteristics of the beast. There's two chapters that go together very closely on this topic. One is Daniel chapter 7. The other is Revelation chapter 12 and 13. And so we're gonna get into this. And you've heard me probably talk before, but in Daniel has a vision. And he sees the sea raging. Yeah, I might even pull some notes here. And out of the sea comes how many beasts? Four beasts. You turn over and you look at the book of Revelation. What do you see in Revelation 13? The dragon stood on the sand of the seashore. I saw a beast coming out of the sea. Daniel chapter 7. The four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea, and four great beasts were coming up from the sea, different from one another. So the imagery is virtually identical in Revelation 13 and Daniel chapter 7, and we're going to go back. We're going to cover Revelation chapter 12 as well. But if you want to know about the beast of Revelation 13, you need to know about the beasts of Daniel 7. If you want to know about the arrogance and the blasphemy of the beast in the book of Revelation, Revelation 13, verse 5, there was given to him a mouth to speak arrogant words and blasphemies, and he opened his mouth in blasphemies against God. Then it behooves you to go back and look at Daniel chapter 7, verse 8. While I was contemplating the horns, behold, another horn, a little one, came up among them, and three of the first horns were pulled out by the roots. And behold, the horn possessed eyes like the eyes of a man. Now, I don't know who these 10 horns are and the three horns and the one horn. Someday, I got a feeling this is a topic that's not going to go away for me. I got a feeling I'm going to keep meditating and digging and allowing whatever insight the Holy Spirit gives me to come up. But I think in the past, people have been trying to figure out the little horn and the big horn. Sounds like Custer, right? The little big horn. And they don't even understand what the beast is. So we need to go back and we say, look, here's what the beast is. Here's what the Antichrist is. Here's what 666 is. The beasts, quite simply, are political powers. They're kingdoms, they're nations, they're empires. Daniel chapter 7, a fourth beast. Okay, the fourth beast is very interesting. Daniel's fascinated with the fourth beast, by the way. I think there's a pretty reasonable likelihood that the fourth beast corresponds with the beast of Revelation 13. And again, this is not foretelling. I'm not foretelling. I'm simply going to describe to you what the beast is, what the beast does. And if you want to speculate on what this beast is or give it a name or say it's this entity or that entity, that's fine. But this is like learning, algebra. Before you can learn algebra, you got to learn arithmetic. Before you can learn mathematics, you got to learn arithmetic. Before you can learn algebra and geometry and trigonometry, you got to learn basic mathematics. So before we figure out what these little horns are all about, we got to back up and say, well, what the heck is this beast? And what's the sea in the first place? The sea is the course of history. The sea is the course of history. Out of the course of history, empires arise. They're called beasts in the Bible. Daniel's looking at the sea of history, of human history, and he sees four great beasts arising. And he's fascinated, dreadfully fascinated with his fourth beast that's absolutely terrifying. Has claws of iron and teeth of bronze and is destroying and tearing into all these other kingdoms. The fourth beast, dreadful and terrifying, extremely strong. It had large iron teeth. It would devour and crush and trample down the remainder with its feet. It was different from all the other beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. It was different than all the other beasts, and this is going to tie into maybe the 666. I'm just going to throw out some ideas, let you wrestle with them, let you say, you know what, that makes sense, or that doesn't make sense. That's fine. I'm not the be-all and end. I don't have the latest, late great Planet Earth by Hal Lindsey II. I don't have that. While I was contemplating the horns, behold, another horn, a little one. Generally speaking, a horn is going to be another political power, a sense of a king or a smaller component of that beast. Because obviously it's a component of the beast because it's on the beast. The horns are on the beast. And three of the first horns were pulled out by the roots before it. Behold, the horn possessed eyes like the eyes of a man and mouth uttering great boasts. Verse 11, skipping down to verse 11 of Daniel chapter 7. And I kept looking because of the sound of the boastful words. Boastful words, which the horn was speaking, and I kept looking at the beast that was slain, and kept looking until the beast was slain, and the body was destroyed and given over to the burning fire. And my contention, and I'll demonstrate this, is that these are not alligators crawling up out of the Mississippi River. This is not a giant hippopotamus with six heads and 10 horns crawling up out of off the Atlantic seaboard. How do I know that? Daniel chapter 7, verse 17. These great beasts, which are four in number, are four kings who will arise from the earth. These great beasts are four kings. They're political empires. They're geopolitical entities. It ain't an alligator with horns on it coming out of his head. These four beasts, which are four in number, are four kings who will arise from the earth. Here's the good part. I'll skip to the very end. Because I'm flat out telling you. But the saints of the highest one will receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever for all ages to come. I mean, that's the end of the story. Beast will arise. Satan arises, make war against the king, make war against his people, but at the end of the day, you can go back and read Revelation 3, 9, which I've covered extensively. God will demonstrate very clearly who his chosen people are. And the kingdoms of this world will become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ, and he will rule forever. And a time will come when the saints of the highest one will receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever for all ages to come. Verse 19, Daniel chapter 7. Again, Daniel's like, dude, this fourth beast is wild. It's completely different than these other beasts. What is it about this fourth beast? And these are questions you and I need to ask ourselves. What makes this fourth beast different? I have some speculations. I have some musings. I'll share those with you. But we're trying to learn arithmetic here. We're trying to learn mathematics here before we get to trigonometry and geometry. Seems to me the late great planet Earth and Hal Lindsey and that whole pre-post mid-trib rapture, they're trying to do calculus and they don't know how to do mathematics and arithmetic. You used to see drawing pictures. Oh, here's the beast. Here's a drawing of the beast. Yeah, the beast is coming. And I'm like, no, that ain't it. These political powers arise over the course of history. Bible says right there, they're kings, empires. I desire to know the exact meaning of the fourth beast, which is different from all the others, exceedingly dreadful, with its teeth of iron and claws of bronze, which devoured, crushed, and trampled down the remainder of the beast, the remainder of the empires with its feet. There's competition among the empires, battling like beasts. They not necessarily, everybody thinks, oh, it's all rational. We have a rational world order. Bible says, hey, they're like beasts, man. They're like raging beasts. If you want another proof from me that the beasts are political empires, read Daniel chapter 8. It talks about the ram and the goat, the ram and the goat, the ram and the goat. And it gives you the interpretation. The ram and the goat. It's the Greeks and the Persian Medes Empire. I guess I might as well just turn to it. Since I got fast thumbs this morning, I'll see how fast my thumbs are. Vision of the ram and the goat. Daniel chapter 8, verse 21. And the shaggy goat represents the kingdom of Greece. And the large horn that is between his eyes is the first king. So there you go. Okay? Kind of spot on, right? Horn is a subset of the beast. You want to know what the horns are? They're a subset of that beast, of that world empire, that global, historical, geopolitical entity. You get the interpretation in Daniel chapter 8. The ram which you saw with the two horns represents the kings of Media and Persia. The shaggy goat represents the kingdom of Greece, and the large horn that is between its eyes is the first king. And the broken horn and the four horns that arose, of course, this refers to Alexander the Great. You guys probably understand that. Alexander the Great comes out of Europe, and he conquers a good portion of the world, Middle East, clear to India and back, Africa, Egypt. And he dies in his 30s at a young age, and he splits his kingdom not amongst his sons, but amongst his generals. He creates four kingdoms out of that one kingdom, four horns out of that one great beast that was the shaggy goat out of Greece. Alexander the Great of Macedonia, just north of what we now call Greece. Same area, European area. So we're doing math, okay? We're learning our 2 + 2 = 4s. All right, we don't need to jump to the latest, greatest interpretation of, you know, the 7 and the 3 and the 1. And right now we're just trying to learn math. The beasts are geopolitical empires. The horns are subsets thereof, according to Daniel chapter 7 and Daniel chapter 8. You want to build a context. You want to build a foundation. You want to build a framework. And let these things turn over in your heart as you meditate on the Word of God. And get this foundation in there, and then we can start to move forward. So we know that geopolitical empires are of concern to the Almighty God. He showed Daniel what was going to happen. Showed you the fourth beast that was completely different. It's utterly violent and vicious and preyed on the other kingdoms and destroyed them. Is it too early to make historical analogies? I could talk about a number of kingdoms on the earth that have done that. I could talk about Napoleon and his conquest of Western Europe and his invasion of Russia as a raging beast that conquered other kingdoms, and eventually he's defeated. I could talk about the Romans that conquered many different territories, and then they seem to have receded. Did they reemerge with Christian Europe and the United States? I could talk about the Babylonian Empire. Again, there's many beasts, many empires. The worldly affairs were absolutely a concern to the prophet Daniel. They were so important to God that he showed Daniel what was going on with them. And when you delve into the theoretical and theological constructs of the book of Revelation, you're delving into the historical. You're delving into the beasts and the empires of the world. Moving on. And Daniel wanted to know the meaning of the 10 horns. And he's looking at one. This one horn, it has a mouth uttering great boasts. Arrogance, arrogance, arrogance. I would submit to you that King Nebuchadnezzar went through a period of arrogance, then he repented. Again, that's the book of Daniel. Did he not say, is this not Babylon the Great that I have created by my own strength and power and wisdom and glory? God said, oh, really? He made him walk around like a beast, sleeping in the dew of the morning, sleeping in the grass, eating grass, wandering around on his hands and his knees. He brought that arrogance down. Now, we have a kingdom full of arrogance, speaking blasphemies against the Most High. Now, a little history here. Out of the heart of Christendom, out of the heart of Christian Europe, emerged what we falsely call the Enlightenment. Lucifer is an angel of light. He's the light bearer. That's what he called. That's his name, one of his names. And they call this thing the Enlightenment. And they brought forth what becomes French atheistic secularism. There is no God. God is a figment of your imagination. At best, religion is simply a way for other men to control you. This goes to the heart of Marxism. It goes to the heart of any Marxist theory. And sometimes I don't like to talk about Marxist theory because I think you're almost sidestepping the issue. It goes to the heart of the deceiver. the heart of he who literally deceives the whole world. We'll get to that in Revelation 13. That's Satan's greatest power, is deception. He's an angel of light. His name is Lucifer, which is the light bearer. His greatest power is false knowledge. And he deceives, the Bible said he deceives not only the nations, but he deceives the whole world. So out of the heart of Christendom emerges a movement of essentially blasphemous and arrogant words against the Most High. They turned Notre Dame, as you know, into the temple of reason, the temple of man. So you're not a temple to Jesus Christ anymore. We're gonna desecrate this temple and make it a temple of reason to mankind. And this movement has spread for three centuries. It's been growing for 300 years. Out of the heart of Christendom. Imagine that. People talk about the great deception. The coming great deception. I see articles today. This week, there's articles. Oh, the great deception's coming. And this is where I think the church has it wrong. All this stuff isn't coming. We're living in the midst of it. It's already here, baby. It's been here for your whole lifetime. The beast, the Antichrist, the 666, the great deception. We're in it. It's not coming. We're in it. The beast that rages and it defeats all these other enemies and imposes blasphemy, it speaks blasphemy and arrogance. I read about the foreign policy of the United States of America, and you go, you're going to go after a Christian European nation called Hungary because they don't promote homosexuality over there and they won't have open borders? It's a beast that rages. There's other beasts, China, Russia. Understand the nature of the beast. Understand that they're jealous of their own power. They would fight and destroy others. It doesn't have to make sense. This is what's going on. We're doing arithmetic here. You don't have to plug in the pieces and come up with the right answer. We're trying to build building blocks so we can get to geometry and trigonometry and calculus. The beasts are global world empires. So Daniel's talking to the angel. And he said, the fourth beast will be a kingdom on the earth. Again, you don't have to draw little pictures of half crocodile, half giraffe, half hippopotamus. It will be a fourth kingdom. Not just a king, but a kingdom. What will be different from all the other kingdoms and will devour the whole earth and tread it down and crush it. Now, I could speculate on current events today and say, is there not a movement for a one world order, a global order, where the United States is in fact the enforcer of that global order to devour and crush all the competing powers against it? Russia has said no. China has said no. The United States seems to be the... It's not. I'm not saying it's the great. I'm saying it acts as if it were a great beast, and doing the things that are described here. I'm not giving you a one-to-one correlation. I'm just saying let's get some math down, and spend your own time plugging things in historically. As for the ten horns, out of the kingdom, 10 kings will arise, and another after them. He will be different from the previous one and subdue 3 kings. Who are these? I have no idea. But here you go. He will speak out against the Most High. All of this is out of the book of Daniel. After this, we're going to go into Revelation 12 and 13. He will speak out against the Most High and wear down the saints of the Highest One. Okay, what's happened to Christian Europe over the last 3 centuries? French atheism took over Paris. French atheism took over Notre Dame. French atheism took over the country of France. And this disease, advocated and spread by Germans and Englishmen alike, everybody all guilty. I won't even talk about another group of people because we're trying to learn arithmetic here. He will speak out against the Most High and wear down the saints of the Highest One. He will intend to make alterations in times and law that would be given into his hand for times, times, and half a time. Now, the French Revolution, can I say 1789, 1787? Sorry about that. What'd they do? It's year one of the year of man. changes of times. Is that the right correlation? I don't know. I'm just trying to give you some building blocks, and you can muse on this in your own time. I'm just trying to give you some building blocks on how you might want to piece this together. All right. There's Daniel. Let's go over to the Revelation. What's the Revelation? It's the revelation of Jesus Christ. Now, I could go long on this. I've already been doing this for, only 25 minutes. I guess we're good. A great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed in the sun, and the moon under her feet, on the head, a crown of 12 stars. And she was with child, and she cried out, being in labor and in pain to give birth. I would submit to you that Mary never cried out in pain. And Isaiah talks about that, but that's a little different one. Then another sign appeared. Now, I'm not saying that we're not talking about the birth of Jesus Christ. We're absolutely talking about the birth of Jesus Christ. But this is, you know, this woman with the sun and the moon and the 12 stars. Biblically, you can go back to Genesis and we can talk about that. We can talk about who those are, but that's beyond this morning. Another sign appeared in heaven. Behold, a great red dragon having 7 heads and 10 horns. 7 heads, and on his head were 7 diadems. Well, that's something there. He's a beast too, isn't he? He's got the horns in the heads. Okay, he stood before the woman who's about to give birth, so when he gave birth, he might devour the child. He's going to destroy Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ is crucified. He rises from the dead. He ascends into heaven. Revelation 12, verse 5. And she gives birth to a son, a male child, who's to rule the nations with a rod of iron. Again, we see that in the book of Daniel. And we'll see that here in the book of Revelation. And her child was caught up to God and to his throne. That's Jesus Christ. Woman fled into the wilderness. I don't want to get into this yet, but who was this woman? Was it the sons of Israel, which has nothing to do with the current false state of Israel in the Middle East, nothing to do whatsoever with them? They're frauds. They're deceivers. There's war in heaven. No longer a place found for the devil and his angels in heaven. The great dragon was thrown down, the serpent of old, who is called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. All right? His number one thing, his power, is to deceive. And again, this is right out, this is almost quoting Daniel, but this is actually Revelation 15, or Revelation 12, verse 10. Now the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Christ have come, for the accuser of the brethren has been thrown down, he who accuses them before God and day and night. And they overcame him because of the blood of the Lamb, because of the word of their testimony, and they did not love their lives even unto death. That's our minimal calling. That's our minimum calling. This is our minimum calling. We have no less. Did not Jesus say, you want to follow me, you pick up a cross, which the cross is an instrument of death. And you need to willingly embrace that cross, not run from it. That's our minimum calling as servants of the Most High God. It's not a high calling, it's your basic calling. Now, whether he calls you home early or late doesn't matter. It's the word of your testimony, it's the blood of the Lamb, and you don't love your life, even unto death, even if it cost you your life. That's the minimum calling. Jesus Christ was very explicit about that. He says, you want to follow me? You want to follow me? Man, you better be willing to pick up your cross. It says, woe to the earth and the sea, because the devil's come down. The serpent poured out water like a river out of his mouth after the woman, so that she might cause her to be swept away in a flood. Okay, what's the river? It's history. It's nations, it's peoples. I would suggest, and I would have you consider, that Christian Europe was invaded many, many times, and it's being invaded right now. The Muslim Africans invaded up through Iberia, up through Spain. It took the Spanish 700 years to drive the Muslim African out of Spain. They were helped. The Muslim, the Antichrist forces were assisted by those who called themselves Jews. This is 700 years of European history where the Christians drove the invaders out of the Christian lands, of the European lands. God blessed Spain and rewarded them by giving them a conquest of most of the Western Hemisphere, and they brought the gospel of Jesus Christ to the Western Hemisphere. Imagine if the Muslim had taken over and enslaved those people in the darkness of Islam, which is nothing but submission to Satan. It's a method of the devil. Invasions of foreign peoples. And you saw the Mongols and the Ottomans trying to invade Europe over the centuries since the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Why? Oh, they're just looking for new lands. No, it's right here. And the serpent poured water like a river out of his mouth after the woman. Who's the woman? We're going to get to that. There's many women in the Bible. Some are evil, some are good. The earth helps the woman, but skipping down to verse 17. So the dragon was enraged with the woman. Dragon's enraged with this woman. And he went off to make war with the rest of her children, who are her children, who keep the commandments of God and hold to the testimony of Jesus Christ. Satan hates this woman, the bride of Christ. This woman is those who hold to the testimony of Jesus Christ, the bride of Christ, the woman. Satan hates this bride. Satan hates this woman. And he will pour out whatever historical human wave forces to devour. He couldn't get the kid, couldn't get the son. So he goes after the women and her children. Revelation 13. And the dragon stood on the seashore. Again, here's Satan standing on the edge of history, looking at the ebb and flow of history and the nations arising out of history. And then I saw a beast. What's a beast? It's a kingdom. It's an empire. It's a geopolitical empire, a force, historical force. I saw a beast coming up out of the sea, having 10 horns and 7 heads. And on the horns were 10 diadems, and on his heads were blasphemous names. Go back to the fourth beast in Daniel chapter 7. The blasphemy and arrogance of the fourth beast. Again, we're doing arithmetic today. We're doing a little bit of math. We're not ready. I'm not ready to slap names on here. But let's get the building blocks down. The blasphemous names. And the beach. I wish it was the beach. He was on the beach. Dragon stood on the sand of this beach, on the seashore. And the heads were blasphemous names. And the beast, which I saw, was like a leopard, feet like a bear, mouth of a lion. That's calculus. I don't have any insight for you on that. The dragon gave him his power and a great authority. Satan gives a great power and authority to this earthly empire. I'm going to skip down a little bit because we're not in the... I can't do calculus yet. I'm still trying to work on my math and my arithmetic skills. But here we go. Revelation 13, verse 5. There was given him a mouth speaking arrogant words and blasphemies. Same as the fourth beast in the seventh chapter of the book of Daniel. This is Revelation 13. There was given to him a mouth speaking arrogant words and blasphemies. Verse 6. And he opened his mouth in blasphemies against God to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and those who dwell in the heavens. You want to know what blasphemy is? And I've covered this if you've been listening to me. It's not, oh, Jesus is evil. It's not, oh, God is a meanie and he's racist and he's anti-Semitic. No. Blasphemy is when you say, what God? Arrogance is when you say, religion is an invention of man. Blasphemy and arrogance are like, what? You have religious ideas and they give you a little golf clap. Oh, that's so cute. Put that aside. Let's get down to real business and be serious. Blasphemy and arrogance suggest that mankind is his own creation, and we can self-direct our own evolution. Arrogance is we're a byproduct of time and chance, and we are the masters of all creation. Arrogance is when you take and you utterly destroy the image of God through things like transsexual surgery. You deface the image of God. That's the arrogance and the blasphemy. It's not taking the Lord's name in vain. It's something cultural, institutional, historical, foundational, empirical. It's deep, it's powerful, it's broad, it extends through cultures and centuries. And it undermines any conception of Jesus Christ as King and Lord and God and monarch. The blasphemy and the arrogance of the modern, and again, I'm not trying to throw out tag words so you can click on the tag words, because you got to drill down. Satan is the deceiver. He literally, the Bible, I just read it, he deceives the whole world. Revelation 12, verse 9, he deceives the whole world. It's Satan at the heart of this. And he has his beasts, and he has his horns, and he has his synagogue, and he has his people. We're doing mathematics here. We're doing arithmetic. We're building the blocks. Verse 5. Okay, verse 6. Blasphemy and arrogance. And it says, he causes those who dwell on the earth to worship the beast. Then he sees another beast. Verse 14. And he deceives those who dwell on the earth. All right? So that's enough for the beast. Those are building blocks. You say, well, Fritz, you didn't tell me who exactly the beast is. I want to give you building blocks. We need to do arithmetic. And then you can speculate on these things for this historical moment. I can't say that we're at the end of days. I can't say that. What do you think the church was like in the year 999? Everybody absolutely believed, without any question whatsoever, that that was the end of the millennium. That was the end of the thousand-year rule of Jesus Christ on the earth. And the world was coming to an end in 900. Things were not pretty in 999. If you go read the epistles of John and Paul, now children, we're already in the last hour. I would be right to say we're in the last hour, yet so are Paul and so are John. Yet when I look back at them, and they are better and wiser, maybe this is another cycle. Maybe it's our destiny as the church to live through these beasts and fight the beasts. But again, I'm just trying to give you some. I'm kind of trying to give you arithmetic, and then we can work through the mathematics a little bit later. All right, mark of the beast, the mark of the beast. He causes all, the small and the rich, the great and the poor and the free and the slaves, to be given the mark on the right hand and the forehead. All right? It provides that no one will be able to buy or sell except those whose name was on the name of the beast or of a number of his name. Now, everybody's heard about central bank digital currencies, CBDCs. All right, you're going to digitize all your money, and every penny will be tracked centrally. All right, now we're already in a situation where people are demonetized. They can't buy or sell, and they're losing jobs. We already have the attack of those who would drive people out of the economy. They can't buy or sell because they have the wrong ideas. Is this an extension of that? Is this a preview of that? I'm going to step to mathematics here and arithmetic. Let you all do the calculus. Here's wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the what? Of the beast. Not of the Antichrist, of the beast. What's the number of the beast? You're all trying to make it Henry Kissinger or Richard Nixon or Barack Obama or, you know, Klaus Schwab. It's the number of the whole empire, the whole system. It's the number of the whole system. For the number is that of a man. The number is that of a man. Some versions of the Bible, you pull it up, it's the number of man. Look in the Greek, there's not a man. Now, I'm just going to throw it out there. Again, I'm just trying to learn arithmetic. I can't even parse this that well for you. Is this the number of a specific dude? Or is this the number? First of all, we know it's the number of the beast. It is the number of the beast. Second of all, is it the number of man, as in capital M-A-N? If man was created on the sixth day, is that not the number six representative of man in general? Two sixes is a man and a woman. Three sixes is corporate man. I'm just throwing this out there. I don't have the answer to this. Is three sixes corporate man, the corporate identity of man? Is that why the fourth beast is different? You don't have a king at its head. Nobody knows who runs the United States of America today. Nobody has any idea. We know it's not the guy that's losing his marbles in the White House. Are there hidden corporate entities behind that? Corporate identities of whether it's the beast? That number 666. I don't know the answer to that. We're doing arithmetic here. Let you sort through that. I submit that all that's here. Even John said, hey, the Antichrist is already here. Been here for 2,000 years. We're living under a beast, under an empire that's fundamentally Antichrist. And y'all are waiting for something to happen, and we're living through it. And I'm yearning for the church to say, the fight is now. It's not coming. The fight is now. We've submitted to the beast by getting along and going along. And stop. We have ceased to speak the words that Jesus Christ spoke. Talk a lot about that here at bloodandfaith.com. Again, this is Fritz Berger, bloodandfaith.com, for those in the live audience. Building blocks, my brothers. All right, that's it. We're good for this morning. Fritz Berger, bloodandfaith.com.